This episode of Legion of News is made possible by our friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
From high atop the Milkpacking District, in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all-important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson, alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now, as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
All 33 Chilean miners have been freed. The FCC addresses mobile phone bill shock. And neighbors are warned after a cougar kills two goats.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, steel yourselves, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Thursday, October 14th, 2010. The Deschutes County Sheriff's Office is warning people in Central Oregon to keep a close eye on their pets after a cougar attacked and killed two goats. Deputies found the dead goats Wednesday evening on Whittier Drive in the Lapine area. Investigators determined from the injuries that a cougar had killed both goats. The U.S. Department of Agriculture is now investigating, but local deputies urge people to use caution. The Deschutes County Sheriff's Office reminds people to supervise children and pets that are outside and perhaps avoid walking dogs at night in that area. Well, all 33 Chilean miners have been freed after 2 months, 9 days, and 8 hours. When the explosion trapped them 2,000 feet underground, they have all emerged from what many people thought would be their tomb. They were in stunningly good health after 9 weeks underground, with some bounding out of the rescue shaft and into the arms of loved ones. One miner is being treated for pneumonia, but everyone is expected to make a full recovery. And I had some audio on this.
I will just
the wrong thing in front of me.
I'll take this opportunity to talk about a couple of things. A, the fact that you are listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. You can get this program on your mobile device if you like. That is mobile.cascadia.fm, mobile.cascadia.fm. You can also get it in archive form via MP3 right here at Cascadia.fm or at legionofnews.com and via iTunes as well. Also, so last night, the minor guys.
Yeah.
So there's the one guy. It was just this whole panoply of the human experience. All of them more manly than myself, including the guy who was like 65 years old. He'd been working in the mine since he was like 12 or something. And he's one of these like Sam Elliott guys who sort of looks like he's indestructible and falling apart all at once, you know? Like he's just sort of made of gristle, you know, and leather and hate. But just, you know, but just keeps on keeping on because that's what a man does. And then there was they don't even get me started on the guy with the mistress and the wife and the whatever. It was just, did you even hear
no,
that story?
No, I missed the mistress and the wife.
Oh, my God. It's the best thing ever. So I'll tell you in a second because
okay.
We got some other sound to get to. But we've got sound, I guess, from the Chilean story. So I'll let you kind of intro that however you want.
Okay,
to.
Yeah. Chilean President Sebastian Piñera spoke through a translator after the last of the miners was rescued.
This will keep me in office forever!
I'm sorry. That's my interpretation of it.
I think Chile's more unified and stronger than ever. And Chile, today, it's more respected and valued in the world.
And today I say to you, I have secured a second term and a fifth term.
Is it just me, or do they seem to be kind of glossing over the fact that they got trapped in a mine in the first place, meaning that perhaps there was something wrong with the mine?
Yeah, but it's Chile. What are you going to do? I mean,
they're using this as this opportunity to show how awesome they are, but yet, like, have you heard word one from the owners of this mine that caved in and trapped all of them?
Now, to be fair, I'm not even really sure what... I mean, they said it was an explosion, but I don't really know what caused... I mean, things seem to explode, sort of randomly on Earth sometimes, just to kind of keep things lively. So I don't know whether it was actually... Do we know if it was equipment failure of the kind that could have been easily prevented? Do we know if it was human error? Or is it just one of those things that just sometimes... There was this great story on Fox News, I don't know, maybe 3-4 years ago, and it was after there'd been a couple high-profile plane crashes, you know, like Cessnas, and then there'd been some sort of some Delta Airlines mishap. Anyway, so Fox News ran this hour-long alleged, you know, sort of in-depth examination of the issue, just called "Why Planes Crash." And I know that that's not the sort of title that's supposed to make me laugh, but it did.
Well, it's funny.
So at the end of the hour, they basically came to the conclusion that, well, sometimes these things just happen. And they did everything but just turn to the camera and go, "What can you do? Gravity." So I don't know if that's the case here or if it's just that Chile just runs on, like, some guy's credit card most of the year. And it was, you know, and they were shopping at like a swap meet for their mine equipment.
Well, for many of the miners, their greatest worry now is how to deal with the attention that are being lavished on them, including offers of vacations and cash and new iPods.
The key is to take all of it. That's what you do. It's a short ride.
The world is fascinated by both their rescue and the weeks they spent underground. The New York Times details their fitness regimen. With the run of the mine, they were able to jog several miles a day. Their diet included empanadas baked into cylinders and then and steak cut into strips. So it could be, like, you know, sent down the hole. The Daily Beast explains why the miners don't have beards. They actually had razors down in the hole.
God, this just fills me with shame, because this is so different from how any American would... I would just be sitting there like a... I'd be sitting there like a declawed house cat, just whining and waiting for somebody to bring me food and to bathe me with a sponge.
Just cry, just weeping like a girl sitting in a corner.
I don't know what to do. I'm frail.
Be going, God damn it, I can't believe we're trapped down here with Emerson.
Seriously, it's like, you know, I have the entire city of Portland is my oyster if I were to be a jogger, and yet I don't. I just sit at home and I just become spongy. And these guys are actually just, you know, they're trapped in a mine where really, if you want to take an opportunity to do nothing, this would be the time, right?
Who's going to blame you?
No, but instead.
Then again, there is no, like, TV or Xbox. What else are you going to do?
Well, I suppose that's true.
The New York Times also broke down the worldwide news coverage. It was one of the most watched news events of all time, behind only the World Cup, Wimbledon, and President Obama's inauguration, in terms of how many people it drove to the web.
Speaking of the World Cup, by the way, well, I made that observation yesterday that it was perhaps the first great worldwide event followed on Twitter, but... And just, I'm making this prediction right now, that when they do that end-of-year wrap-up, let's look back at the year 2010. And, you know, and Dick Clark just sits immobile in Times Square while Ryan Seacrest introduces some sort of, you know, the glory roll of all the things we did in the last 12 months. You mark my words that the news organizations, they're going to talk about this, and they will mention Twitter in every other story about how it was the great coalescent that sort of brought everything together. World Cup. So that thing that the guy did when he came out, where he led everybody in the chant and the cheer, I didn't know it was an actual soccer cheer. It really was. I thought I was just sort of goofing when I said, "Oh, he led in this sort of Manchester United cheer," and I didn't realize it actually was the cheer of, like, the Chilean soccer club or whatever. So, which makes it even more badass in a way that I can't really appreciate. I think A is not a sports guy. B. Not, you know, I'm in America where no one cares about soccer.
Well, and you can't imagine, like, a bunch of people trapped in a hole, like in Portland, getting dug out, and then they immediately, like, start chanting the Portland Timbers cheer.
Seriously.
Probably not going to happen.
No. Well, there's probably no...
Everybody would just stand around and kind of give a polite golf clap and go, "Dude," you know, one guy would drop his hacky sack.
I'm trying to think of what you would cheer if this happened in America. Like, is there a thing... Is there a thing that if this were to happen in, like, you just pick it, like you spin the wheel of states and you land on Nantucket?
They play We Are the Champions.
Maybe. And I guess Nantucket's not a state, but you know what I'm talking about. Like, if this just happened in some American city and a guy got out of the hole and he was tasked with, you know, as a sort of psychological experiment, you have to then lead the assembled crowd aside in a chant of something that everyone will know and immediately join in on.
God, I don't know.
I can't.
We don't have anything like that.
There's no unifying cheer.
There's hip, hip, hooray. But I don't think people really do that anymore, do they?
No, they don't. Let's roll out the barrel.
21 Skidoo.
I were old.
My God, I'm old. Well, the last minor for heat was shift foreman Luis Urzua, and he spoke afterwards.
These 70 days that we fought so hard were not in vain.
Okay.
All right, then. All right, there you go.
That was a bit anticlimactic.
End.
I just want to go home. Stop talking to me. I was the last one out.
So the mistress guy, though.
Oh, yeah.
So they were talking about this last night on, God, I guess it was CBS. Well, it doesn't matter. They were covering the same story everywhere. But it was Brian Williams, which I guess would make it NBC. By the way, somebody just said in the Skype, Americans would just cheer USA because we're retarded.
Yeah, that's all we got. USA.
Well observed.
Yeah.
In any event, so there's this guy who's stuck down in the mine and whatever. And I wish I should have saved the audio of how they were reporting this, because it is that thing where the way they reported the story, you could hear the smile. I think it was Brian Williams. You could hear the smile on his face as he was realizing the sort of inherently humorous nature of what he was reporting, which I think is A, part of that, you know, human beings are the strangest creed. There's not so queer as folk. and also the fact that, you know, they're Chilean, so ergo, they're a swarthy, passionate people. The story is that there's a guy down in the mine. He has both a wife and a mistress. Now, apparently, the wife, apparently there had been some sort of dust-up a few years earlier when, like, mistress number one or, you know, whatever had been found out by the wife, and there had been some sort of drama there. And so he'd gotten rid of the mistress. And then he picked up, like, another mistress later on, though. And the wife had made it clear that she was not okay with that. That was not a thing. They did not have that kind of arrangement. But again, a passionate people, hot-blooded. And so he's in the mine. And you got, I mean, the stones on this guy. So he sends word up. He's like, hey, so I think they're probably going to, because when the mine cave-in happens, the wife and the mistress, who, you know, presumably are unaware of each other, or at least the wife is unaware of the mistress, they both see on the news, like, hey, Hector's down in the mine. And Hector in the mine, you know, he's worried about starvation and cannibalism and dying a slow death, but also, oh my God, what is happening up top in the world where both my wife and my mistress live? So he sends messages separately to both of them, oh, saying, like, if I should not make it out, know that you are close to my heart. Or,
oh, Hector.
Whatever. And then it's like the good news, bad news. They're like, hey, Hector, no, you're going to get out of here. It's going to be great. Everybody you know and love is going to be here to welcome you as they haul you out of the hole. And Hector goes, oh no, it has all gone so badly. Because I think he was probably figuring, like, this is a good passive way to resolve the situation, you know? He's going to reboot the entire thing just by staying in the mine forever. And so the wife and the mistress, though, he sends, I mean, the balls on this guy. He then sends a thing up to both of them saying, so it would be great if you could both meet me when I leave the mine and embrace me. So he's basically trying to get them to, like, do him at the same time. The instant he leaves the mine, he sends this thing of, like, essentially asking for, like, a threesome as soon as he's hauled to freedom. I'm not making this up.
There, he has never in his life had a better chance of that happening, however. Yeah. I mean, come on.
I mean, he had to go for it. And so he's like, so if you could both be there, it would complete the miracle for me.
Plus, he probably figures that the odds of them actually punching each other out on camera,
yeah,
you know, are less than if they were in private.
Well, maybe it's like when you break up with a girl in a crowded restaurant,
right,
so she can't yell. You know?
You know, it's on CNN. She's much less likely to, like, knife the girlfriend.
To go crazy.
Yeah.
So anyway, so he sends word up saying, if you could both meet me, it would make me the happiest trapped miner in all the world. And the mistress said, absolutely. The wife said, thanks, but no thanks. So she said through, like, she sent word through, like, the news crew. She said, tell him I wish him well. but she's at home, like, packing up her stuff. So the mistress showed up. The wife just said, like, hey, glad you're alive. Bye now. And she's at home putting all her things, so she's gone. But they were reporting this last night, and you can just hear the it's one of those things where the news guys aren't quite sure how to handle it. Because it's funny, yet it's not, but it's heroic, but it's weird. But anyway, so that's, you know, it is part of life's rich pageant, Dawn Taylor.
It is indeed.
All right. Now, see, now this is exactly the time where I should have some magnificent segue into Castalia Language Center, especially because I was doing that whole thing in my bad, you know.
Your bad Hector voice.
You know, from, you know, I will leave you as he left her. My Ricardo Montalban thing.
And the thing is, if you actually knew how to speak Spanish, you could have said those things in Spanish, and it would have been really impressive and really awesome.
Do we know, in fact, that it is... Did we ever find out what they speak in Chile? I know it sounds dumb. I keep wanting to say Chilean, but I'm probably making that up. There might not even be a Chilean language.
I'm sure there,
you know, it's one of those... Like, you know, I didn't realize for the longest time they didn't speak Spanish in Brazil.
They speak Portuguese.
Yeah, but
Spanish is the official language of Chile.
Really?
Yes.
Fantastic.
Okay, there are also a few indigenous languages, such as Mapudungun.
Let me just ask you this, though. Just, you're an ugly American. You can admit this. Mm-hmm. I mean, don't you just sort of feel like Portuguese and Spanish are kind of the same thing? I'm not saying they are, but I mean, from your American vantage point, you should go, well, from here it looks the same. I can't really tell. The differences are too indistinct.
Yeah, I read one of those young adult kind of teen novels when I was about 12 years old about an American girl who becomes like an exchange student or something and moves to Spain, I guess it was, or wherever, Portugal. I guess Portugal. And someplace like that. Someplace they speak Portuguese. And I was like 12 years old. I didn't even know Portuguese existed. So it was like, I was kind of like, what the heck?
Like it was a made-up country.
What the heck is Portuguese?
She moved to Mipos.
And I remember asking my mother, it says she speaks Portuguese. What the heck? My mother is like, God, you're an idiot.
Somebody says in the text, clearly they speak the language of love, Rick. The language of love. If you would like to speak the language of love or perhaps Spanish, PortlandSpanish.com is a website you should go to right now. That is the website for Castalia Language Center. Castalia Language Center, which is owned and operated by Ms. Clara Gremmel. She is from Argentina, a native Spanish speaker, now here in the glorious city of Portland, Oregon. Castalia Language Center is different than the way you might have learned Spanish or any other language early on, where basically they just imprisoned you in a classroom for 55 minutes a day, which, let's be honest, was just to keep you off the street. It was just to keep you from mugging people with a zip gun. I mean, there was no real educating happening in most language classes in high school, especially because you're not there because you want to learn. You're there because, like, they're not going to let you out of the joint until you get like 2 credits or something, and so you just look and you go, I guess I'll just take this, and then you go and you sit there and, you know, you just draw dynamite on the peachy and you know you wait for the bell to ring, and then when you're an adult, too late do you realize you actually didn't bother to learn anything, and then you're trapped in a mine trying to send a message up to your mistress, you know, saying, you know, blah blah blah.
I'm pretty sure that he actually spoke Spanish.
I'm just saying, but if it were you,
if it was me trapped in a mine,
if you were to find yourself in this situation,
I'd be trapped in a mine with 33 guys, and I wouldn't be able to talk to any of them.
How much would that suck, by the way, if you were trapped in the mine and you didn't speak Spanish?
Yeah,
and you would, you know, and you know, you'd be sitting there, you know. I don't know.
It would be sad. It would be just horrific.
It's all just trailed off elliptically. I think I've used up all my minor humor for this hour. Well, the point is, the Castalia Language Center, you can enroll in their Spanish language class with no more. Here's the thing. Unlike being trapped in a room with 32 other people, Dawn, you're in a room with no more than 7 other people. That's the thing right here. They limit class sizes to 8 adults, which means you're going to get near individualized attention. And, you know, they just don't do it through like rote memorization, where you're just committing stuff to memory without having any context for it. You're going to learn it conversationally, which means you can speak it conversationally. And they will adjust to whatever your schedule is, whatever days of the week work best for you, and whatever your language acumen is at this moment. Castalia Language Center at PortlandSpanish.com. That is PortlandSpanish.com. Here is Dawn Taylor.
Mobile phone bill shock is a growing problem, and it's gotten the attention of the Federal Communications Commission. It's when you have a bill that's higher than usual due to unexpected fees and overage charges. The FCC's Chief of Consumer and Governmental Affairs, Joel Gurin, says the commission could vote today to allow public comment on a few proposals.
What is the name of this?
Charges.
Charges. I'm not sure that I have that cut. Well, for the love of God.
Well, then why did you give me this?
You know, that's a good question.
Sound.
That's, if only I had the answer to that. Hold on a second. Let me just, Let me take this moment to check. Wait. Here we go.
I operate on faith here.
No, that's your fool. You know, and here's the thing. It was right in front of me. I mean, like, it was right in front of me in another folder. It was literally on the soundboard in huge letters. It says charges in all caps. All right. So this is that guy talking about that story.
Proposals for how carriers could alert people when they're either in danger of running over their text or data limits or their voice limits, or when they're in international roaming territory.
Well, depending on who you are, I already get that. Like with AT&T, now maybe this is just an AT&T thing, but now I have to go online to do it, to be fair. It's not like they send me a thing, I don't think. But I've only had it for like a month, so maybe they do. But you can go online and it'll actually tell you like what your data usage is and like how many text things you've sent. And because you're an idiot American, and by you I mean me, they actually have the numbers. But there's also just like a big thing that looks like a speedometer, and it shows like a red when you have to pay, and there's a big, you know, there's like a gauge that just shows where you are.
Yeah, I don't think the problem isn't not, you know, that you're stupid and you go over and you're not paying attention. I mean, that's kind of your own problem. I mean, when I first saw this story here and they said, you know, bill shock, you know, unexpected fees and that sort of thing, I was thinking about, like, you know, on phones and on phone bills and on cable bills and stuff, where you just have this huge pile of little nickel and dimey taxes and service charges. Next thing you know, you're paying like $80 a month for something that's supposed to only cost you $20. And it's, you know, that's the sort of thing they should be addressing, not that people are too stupid to pay attention to whether or not they've got too many, you know. I mean, I have my inexpensive little pay-as-you-go Virgin phone, but I get text messages from them going, you know, you're running low on funds.
Well,
and you only have $5 left in here in 54 minutes, so you should put some more money. And it's like, they tell me. And I'm like, okay, thank you, Virgin.
Well, and all, you know, the other thing people don't realize is that every time you send a text, it is effectively, you're like sending two, right? Because most of the time you're either responding to somebody or they're responding to you. And so every text basically costs you twice what you sort of think it costs. That's the other thing. People don't really realize that. If you know, it's 10 cents a text, but they don't realize that so that it's basically 20, though, again, because it's always like a reply or something. So, and yeah, if like you can't take 12 seconds to go online. I mean, you remember when they used to have to send you bills in the mail and it would take days and days to erupt? It takes you like, you can probably do it from the phone. I think actually on, and this isn't just like an iPhone thing, but I think on, you know, most smartphones, I can actually press like star whatever, whatever, and it just says like, this is how much you're going to pay.
Yeah, my phone, and again, I've got like a fairly inexpensive, cheap-ass little system, but it's like I have a menu, and one of the things on the menu is a picture of a dollar sign. And if I choose that, it just tells me what my status is, you know? It's not that hard.
I did the most amazing thing, which I guess I could have done with my BlackBerry, but it's like I had it on some weird autopay where I was actually, when I was, it was like sitting in waiting to pick up Laura or something. And I was just sitting there in the waiting room or, you know, at her work or whatever. And I just paid the entire thing. I paid the entire bill from my phone, just like using the keypad. And then it like stored everything immediately. So now on my phone, there's like a macro where I just press one button on the keypad and it just like pays the entire thing. And then like it auto sends me a receipt. And I know I sound like an old person being amazed, you know, by the fact that I can set my VCR and it'll record Guiding Light whenever I want. But I mean, when I say the past sucks, I mean, that's kind of a laugh line, but also it's true. Yeah. I mean, I really just, I remember my mom just like bending over the checkbook and like, you know, Bob Cratchit just having to track all that stuff.
Well, do you remember being a little kid before there were ATMs?
Yes.
And being dragged along to the bank?
Yes.
With a parent who had to stand in line to get money?
Or having to get money from the bank on a Friday, because otherwise you were going to be screwed all weekend because you wouldn't be able to get money till Monday.
Yeah. And now it's like, with my phone or my electric bill or whatever it is, I just log onto the intranet and I go, pay this please, and it just sucks the money out of my, and I, you know, it's awesome.
Can I tell you, I don't even write, I have a checkbook and I have a checking account, but I don't even have to write paper checks anymore. And I'm not just talking about if I pay like with a credit card. There's that thing where you can go online to my bank anyway, and they'll actually, this is how lazy I've become, there's a thing where like for no cost, they will actually write the paper check for you. I just go and I go, pay this by a check. Like I had to pay my leverage commission, and it was a thing where they paid me and I didn't realize they hadn't taken it out. And so, you know, Maury, you know, sends me this, you know, I hate to be this guy, but Maury needs to wet his beak. Please send me my 10%. And so I go to the bank and I'm like, da-da-da-da, and I hit the thing. And then they scan it on the way out so I can log on and I can see a scan of the paper check that the bank themselves, they've created and they've sent off to the guy. It's just fantastic.
Even better, there was an ad I just saw on TV for, I think it was for Chase the other day, that they're doing a thing now that they've got a program. It's an app for like your cell phone. If someone gives you a check, you take a photograph of the front and the back of the endorsed check. And it deposits it for you.
Seriously, here's the
thing. You don't even have to deposit the physical check.
Here's the thing. Chase is my bank. I have a check in my bag right now that I was going to put in the bank after the program today. And I have an iPhone in my pocket. So I'm going to try all that later on.
Try that. Yeah, because I guess the fact that you've actually already signed it, they accept that as an electronic signature.
Zam.
And yeah.
That is awesome. I'm totally doing that in like 31 minutes. By the way, also in 31 minutes, the Rick Emerson radio program will come your way. Coming up today, Job Watch, Cheney Watch. Mr. Big Jim Willig will be in the studio with us. Also, Anna Griffin from The Oregonian. And something else that seemed fantastically interesting. Well, Jim's bringing a top five with him. It's going to be, he is a funny fellow.
He
does a lot of comedy in Portland, so he's going to share with us the top five songs he uses to put himself in a comedic frame of mind before performance. So that's coming up later on. You can find out more about the Rick Emerson radio program, which is really the best thing that's ever existed anywhere, at rickemerson.com. Here is Don Taylor.
It's time for science.
Science on the march. Right here at Legion of News. Here's Don Taylor.
Everyone knows that sharks have an amazing sense of smell. Toss a chunk of salmon into a shark tank and you can see it in action. But can they really detect a drop of blood in an Olympic-sized swimming pool or a mile away in the ocean, as popular legend suggests? This myth smelled a little fishy to scientists in Florida, who decided to put it to the test. They found that sharks don't live up to their reputation in the movies, documentaries, and pages of scientific journals. Although a shark's sense of smell is extremely keen, it's no better than that of a typical fish. From what we know now, they can't smell a drop of anything in an Olympic-sized swimming pool, said Tricia Meredith, a biologist at Florida Atlantic University in Boca Raton. The idea that sharks have the best noses in the ocean may be partly inspired by our fears of them. People are afraid if they pee or bleed into the ocean, sharks are going to sniff them out and eat them, said Meredith. In scientific circles, though, the shark's reputation is based on its anatomy. Unlike human beings, sharks have separate openings for breathing and smelling. Gills on the sides of their heads capture oxygen in the water, while two nostrils at the front of their face pull water into a nasal chamber where smells are detected. It's a pretty logical jump to make, she says, that they have a considerably better sense of smell. But no one had ever actually tested it.
It seems like a thing that, I mean, whether or not they have a keen sense of smell, they still have a better sense of smell than I do. And it's, you know, like, they can detect me way before I can detect them. So it's sort of a zero-sum game there. It doesn't really seem to matter all that much.
But the thing is, though, that if you, like, fall into the ocean and you cut yourself, sharks aren't going to just suddenly, like, a mile away go, blood, and, like, come screaming towards you. They honestly don't smell any better than other fish.
So the downside is, though, is that there probably are sharks within like 100 yards of you at any given time. So you're probably effed regardless.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things they said logically is because, like with many, particularly predators, because sharks are so dependent on their sense of smell for food and such, if they did have a sense of smell that was as sensitive as they are, you know,
believed to be,
they would just be really super confused all of the time.
Right, because there'd be food everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
So, yeah. So, nope, they can't do that. This week, Apple was awarded a patent for technology which allows parents to prevent their kids from sending and receiving explicit text messages. Or sexting.
Yeah.
Which, does anyone actually say that?
You know, the thing is, we've started saying it, though. I mean, just...
Once the people in the media started saying it, did that mean that actual regular people really started saying
it? See, that's the thing, is like, I have found myself using it only because it's dumb. I mean, it's dumb, but it's how these things happen. I have found myself, maybe in conversation with you, maybe it was Sarah, we were talking about something or other. Wait, maybe it was the Brett Favre thing. And it was like, oh, what? I think I was talking to Sarah, and I said, have you guys talked about the Brett Favre thing on Fun Employment? She goes, what? And I said, oh, he was sexting with this chick. I've started using that for the same reason everybody started saying, although I don't know if we still do, but everybody was sort of saying metrosexual, even though we recognize that it's like a dumb word, but the reason you use it is, I have to
it's
say this,
quicker.
Well, and as much of a language Nazi as I really am, I have to admit, it does accomplish, it accomplishes the purpose of language, which is to communicate, because when you say sexting, everybody knows what you mean, which I guess means that it probably is the right word to use.
And it gets it across more efficiently than saying sending naughty text messages.
Of a sexual nature. Yeah, so people go, oh, I get it. All right.
Well, psychologist Susan Lipkins says some adults may want to consider altering their own messages.
Marriages really be split up because the sexting that goes on between people outside of the marriage
can
happen so quickly that it increases the intensity of the relationship, and before you know it, we're having 30, 40, 50-year-olds and their marriages are splitting up.
So, there's several things here. First of all, just having had that whole discussion about the word and the validity of the word, it still sounds dumb.
Yeah, it does. You know, this is more of the same thing, though. I mean, when you saw an increase of women in the workplace working side to side with men, there were media stories about how suddenly there was going to be this skyrocketing of extramarital affairs because women were in the workplace with men.
And because your temptress is done.
You know, when people started, you know, IMing and more people got on the internet and were talking to each other on the internet, we get stories about how extramarital affairs are now going to skyrocket because people are flirting with each other online. Now we're hearing that extramarital affairs are going to skyrocketing because people are sexting each other. You know, the thing is, if people are going to fool around, they're going to fool around.
Really, I think it's not so much sexting, or technology as it is, what do you call that, DNA and biological evolution.
Yeah.
Calling me crazy, I'm going on a limb here. I think also the actual, the pleasurable nature of sex itself might have something to do with it, not so much the internet.
Yeah.
So, fun as it is to jab letters onto your, you know, like Droid X or whatever, I think the actual effing might play some part in the affair.
By the way, at what point is getting a text message from someone sexy?
That's a good question. I wonder when it crosses the line from just from being a text to them being a text that is maybe a little bit inappropriate or naughty in some way to actually sexting.
And how exactly is it sexy? That's the thing, is that I can see, you know, somebody sends something, you are hot, I have a penis,
woot,
I like your boobies, or whatever, but it's like, how are you who is on the other end of that going, oh, that
makes me hot.
That's working for me.
I am really turned on right now. I don't know, somebody asked if we are, he says now, are you talking about sexting, comma, honest to blog? Mark. So there you go. Answering a little meta thing. Well done, sir.
Well, critics argue the application allows for censorship, but Lipkins thinks it's a great idea.
You're going to have the choice as to whether to use it or not. And if it makes people stop and think, and then they're still
sure
able to send their sext, then
sext.
What we're doing is...
Now she's just using it as a noun.
Sending a sext?
Helping them to be a little safer.
No!
That's stupid.
No!
That's just dumb.
No! Never, ever, ever say that. Anyone, ever.
You're going to have the choice as to whether to use it or not. And if it makes people stop and think, and then they're still able to send their sex.
God!
Oh, I'm so glad we did this story now. That's great. The story was irritating, and then it just became awesome right there at the end. Way to pull it out of the fire, Ms. Lipkins.
Oh. All right. In a laboratory in Central Europe, six men are being beaten up by a robot. According to Isaac Asimov's first...
Wait, what?
Men are being beaten up by a robot.
Okay.
According to Isaac Asimov's first law of robotics, which states that a robot may not injure a human being or through inaction allow a human being to come to harm... You know, they're doing it wrong. Yet, New Scientist magazine is...
Does he owe the robot money or something? I mean, is it... You are late on the payment.
Well, New Scientist magazine is reporting that a powerful robot has been tasked with, quote, hitting people over and over again in a bid to induce anything from mild to unbearable pain. There's a good...
Why?
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 Because of Asimov's rule of robotics about robots not injuring human beings. They're trying to teach a robot where the human threshold for pain is, so we can teach robots when to stop punching people.
Oh, yeah, that's how they'll use that knowledge. Sure. They'll use that information for good. That's how that always works.
Professor Borat Pofsi was the genius who came up with the experiment. He got ethical approval to carry it out and coaxed six of his colleagues into taking the increasingly powerful blows from the robot. Professor Pofsi sees a day when humans work comfortably side to side with robots and felt it was important to find a way to teach them to have some form of empathy for humans.
Okay, I am telling you right now, this story is made up. It's made up. It's not real. Or maybe I'm just projecting my deep and abiding hope that it's not real. There's no way. Why would you do that? Why would you teach robots exactly where the human threshold for pain lies? This is like, it's like the very definition of the ill-advised. Rarely do you get to look and you get to see the dividing line where it all went wrong. I mean, where you can just see the thread that you pulled where the sweater just disintegrated right in front of us. Jesus. That is that is misapplied science, like at its base. I mean, okay.
Well, he wrote a paper with the title "Cooperation of Human Operator and Small Industrial Robot," and said that future robots will not work behind safety guards with locked doors or light barriers. Instead, they will be working in close cooperation with humans, which leads to fundamental concern of how to ensure safe physical human robot interaction. Despite all the precautions undertaken, the collision between robot and man can occur. His early paper details research using a rubber arm covered in sensors, which took increasingly powerful blows from a robot fist, although robot's painfully pointed spike might be more apt. he was able to drive the robot to the point where it delivered significant tissue damage. And at this point, he decided to get real people involved just to make sure that, you know, the robot would stop punching when supposed to.
I am so filled with fear at this moment. Okay.
So, there you go.
You're listening to Legion of... Jesus. You're listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. This seems like a good time to talk about electricity and scientific knowledge and the correct application of that knowledge versus, let's say, a really astonishingly ill-advised and incorrect application of that knowledge. Let's talk about Squires Electric, a brand new business partner, and someone who almost assuredly is not going to wire your home to kill you in your sleep. I mean, did you say that they hooked a spike to the robot?
Well, it was a mechanical arm, so, you know, it was a mechanically driven spike.
Yeah, that's a robot with a spike. That's like a robot with a shiv, basically.
Pretty much, yeah.
It's like that guy. Who's the there's in Futurama? There's Calculon, and then there's the. But who's the there's the gangster? There's the clamps.
Oh yeah,
I'll give you the clamps. There's that guy.
Well, the guy said he used a pointy fist because quote,
a pointy fist.
It appears to be most dangerous in human robot interactions.
Pointy fist, by the way, that's my Asian martial arts name. All right, I don't even know what I'm doing, except to say that. This is brought to you by Squires Electric, a brand new business partner here at Legion of News. If it has to do with wires or wiring, if you perhaps got some crazed mechanical beast chasing you through the labyrinth that is your home, attempting to clamp or spike or point or punch or harm you in some way, look, you may just be screwed. I don't know. There's probably nothing you can do there, to be quite honest. But anything up to that, I would imagine Squires Electric can take care of. Free estimate, so you know about how much it's going to cost to get this mechanized death machine maybe under control to whatever degree that's possible. So they'll do free estimates. No job too small. I would say no job too large. You know, that's true now. It sounds like the no job too large thing may not be true in 5 or 10 years, depending on how the exponential growth of electronic intelligence unfolds. But
well, Joe Squires, yes. Joe Squires might not be able to save you from a homicidal punching robot.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, really, and it's like, and the estimate might be off, frankly, for that job. I just don't know. But, you know, to some reasonable degree, if it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business or, you know, maybe a camp where you and your loved ones have been put by your robotic overlords. I don't know. He could maybe there again. I don't really know that he's going to be able to fix everything. He'd probably lead you in a cheer of some kind to boost morale.
USA, USA.
Jesus. Anyway, so within reason, electrical wiring of any kind in your home, whether it's Ethernet, whether it's electric wiring, whether it's light sockets, whether it's installing the ceiling fan, figuring out why an outlet isn't working correctly, or just making sure that everything is correct and safe. You got a 100-year-old house, you're getting it all up to code, as they say. You can find out more about Squires Electric at 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609 or SquiresElectric.com. Here is Don Taylor. Is that we still in science?
No.
Thank you.
We are done.
Turn that off.
We are done with science.
It's too much. It's just, yeah. All right. Here's Don Taylor at the Legion of News news desk.
Three men tried to kidnap a young woman in Forest Grove Wednesday night, but she managed to escape and then alerted police. The 18-year-old woman said a man approached her from behind just after 10 p.m. near the intersection of Pacific Avenue and B Street. Then she said a man grabbed her and tried to force her into a van with two other men inside. She said she managed to escape by kicking one of the men and hitting another with a tool and then jumping out when the van stopped. The victim described her attackers as Hispanic men and said one of them had a scar on the right side of his neck and another was heavy set wearing an L.A. Lakers cap.
She hit them with a tool.
Yeah, just a tool. Perhaps a wrench or a an awl.
An awl with an adze. Anyway, let's see. Numerous observations here. Asimov's laws of robotics will certainly F things up for sadomasochists, especially if they want to have a sex bot. That's true, because if the robot won't... Well, I guess maybe that's where the pain threshold thing comes in.
Yeah.
So the robot can flog you, but not, like, you know, too much.
And again, we teach robots safe words.
Yes. This, he actually says, am I to understand that we are creating a fisting bot? Yes. Yes, apparently we are, sir. I'll let you know when it's completed. You're listening to Legion of News. Don't forget, you can get it later on today via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download at Cascadia.fm or at LegionofNews.com. The Rick Emerson Show comes up today at 1 o'clock or slightly thereafter. Job Watch today, Cheney Watch, Anna Griffin from The Oregonian, and our friend Big Jim Willig going to be in the studio with us as well. Oh, and I found, and I have the best thing. I found this yesterday, and I don't know why I have never heard this before. So now everybody's heard, you know, you've heard the meltdown, the Casey Kasem's meltdown about the dead dog. I found a supplemental one. It's from a different thing altogether. It's him recording drop-ins where, you know, you're listening to America's Top 40 on WBZN. It's like 3 minutes of him recording those, and then just, of course, just losing his mind, as apparently he did constantly. And I'd never heard it before. I thought I'd heard all of the Casey Kasem freakout stuff. It's a whole separate thing of him trying to record call letters and just going bonkers over it. So anyway, so that's coming up in the Rick Emerson Show.
Oh, hooray.
Today. Yes. So that's at rickemerson.com. Here is Don Taylor.
It's time for entertainment news.
All right, here's your entertainment news for Thursday.
Rapper T.I. took a detour on his way to a video shoot on Wednesday to talk a suicidal man down from the ledge of a 22-story building. T.I., who also goes by his real name, Clifford Harris Jr., heard about the man on the radio and showed up on the scene, filming a video message for police that was then relayed to the potential jumper. The man agreed to come down in exchange for a chat with T.I. and spoke with the rapper for a few minutes before he was taken to the hospital.
I wish that I had some instant... they need to create some instant auto-tune button. On microphones or on mixing boards like this, so I could immediately do an autotune joke in autotune voice.
Yeah.
I know how to do that. Like, I can do it on the Mac, but it's a circuitous process. There's no real time. There's no on-off switch for that.
Well, T.I. said, I didn't wake up this morning with the intentions of going down and helping hostage negotiators talk someone off a ledge. I don't think that could be in anyone's plan of action.
Fair point.
After being busted on drug charges in L.A. last month, a federal judge will decide on Friday whether to rescind his probation and send T.I. back to prison.
All right, then.
Actor David Arquette took to his Twitter page to give a public apology for giving intimate details about his relationship with estranged wife Courtney Cox on the Howard Stern show. I went on Howard Stern Monday to provide clarity and honesty about what I'm experiencing, he tweeted. But while doing that, I shared too much. It's all right for me to be honest about my own feelings, but in retrospect, some of the information I provided involved others, and for that, I am sorry and humbled.
Well, I think somebody must have just reminded him about the sad case of John Mayer, who learned really quickly that America tends to pick a favorite in all of these breakups, and then they just side with whoever that person is, just unreservedly. And everybody else is just, you know, anybody else in that equation is the bad guy automatically.
And in this case, the one who has a highly rated sitcom on ABC,
yeah,
may be the one that people like a little bit better.
Yeah, no, it's like anybody anywhere who dates Jennifer Aniston just has to know that the breaking up really is the extrication is the hardest part there, because we will all automatically take her side. Apparently, like in everything, until she could be accused of genocide, and we would just be like, "Well, but she's just so." I wish she could find love, though. And you know, so it is with Courtney Cox.
Genocide.
There you go. Yeah. Thanks.
Comedian Dane Cook's half-brother and former business manager, Daryl McCauley, was sentenced to 5 to 6 years in prison after admitting to stealing millions of dollars from Cook's business accounts. On Wednesday, McCauley pleaded guilty to 27 counts of larceny, 3 counts of forgery, and single counts of embezzlement and conspiracy.
Now it's all over, but I had this long, long stretch of wonderful time where I forgot he existed. Now you've just reminded, it's all come crashing down.
He is so aggressively not funny.
Yeah.
And just one of those people that that I find myself feeling genuinely angry that he has a career. Not since Tom Green has anyone just irritated me that he actually is making money on his so-called comedy.
I just wish him so much physical harm.
Yeah.
I just afflictions of the most horrific variety.
And it's not at all shocking that he would be so stupid that his half brother and business manager would actually steal his money.
Well, and I mean, honestly, at this point, in a post Behind the Music era, if you are having your brother anything, half brother, brother in law, if you're having your family manage your money, like, you get whatever's coming to you, you know, or you get whatever you lose, I guess, if you want to put it that way, because it's like, after Billy Joel, we all know that you don't do that.
Yeah, Queen Latifah has a autobiography she wrote, sort of memoir, and she was interviewed on NPR, and I heard it the other day, and they asked her if it was uncomfortable for her to write about losing all of her money, which apparently she did,
right,
in the same way that, you know, these musicians often do. And she said, yeah, she was kind of embarrassed about it and awkward, but then she said she also had to realize that, you know, it happens to a lot of people. It happens to people who had a lot more to lose than she did. As she said, she says, hell, Donald Trump filed for bankruptcy. But she said she learned a lot from it, mainly, always sign all your own checks.
Yes. Yeah. No, here's three little words to be very conscious of. Power of attorney. So, you know, you don't want to do that. That'll end badly for you.
Bush frontman Gavin Rossdale, thinking of people you haven't thought of in a very long time, confirmed in Details magazine that he had a one-time fling with a cross-dressing pop star who went by the name of Marilyn. I think at the outset there was a sort of fear that right at the beginning of Bush, and I didn't want to be a part of it, he said. He's married to Gwen Stefani, by the way. I've never wanted to appear closed about it. It's just something I've never talked about, really, because it's always been in the glare of the tabloid world.
Are we talking about Marilyn Manson?
No, I don't think
pop
so.
Pop star implies
cross-dressing pop star who went by the name Marilyn.
Okay, but star implies somebody we would know.
I don't know.
Who else could it possibly be? I mean, what other pop star?
Maybe it was Marilyn Manson.
I can't think of another pop star. I can't think of another prominent singer, you know, current singer named Marilyn at all.
Apparently, he was 17 at the time, and he's owned up to it in some magazine interview, as if, I don't know.
Well, this is not your fault, of course. This is the fault of Gavin Rossdale, who, again, it's like a day of endless disappointment. I forgot about him. Now I know he exists. This is like the end of Sphere, only the opposite. Well, that's just a stupid story. Why would you say that if you're that guy? A cross-dressing pop star named Marilyn.
I
mean, that just means nothing. There's no information to be had there. That is just a... That's a teaser trailer for a movie that we'll never get to see.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, well, whatever. Was he 17, he said?
He said he was 17.
Well, then it probably wasn't Marilyn Manson, because it doesn't seem like he's going to be porking underage boys.
I think it was,
person?
Yeah, it's a British singer who actually just goes by the name of Marilyn, and is apparently a pal of Boy George.
Yeah, well, all right, well, fair enough.
Through her nonprofit Hawn Foundation, actress Goldie Hawn has developed a new teaching program called Mind Up. Here, she explains, a child's well-being is tied to their academic performance.
It's one of those, like, low... hold on a second.
In the acts of kindness, building empathy, which is what we do, all these things not only prepares a child's mind, readying them for learning, but it creates social and emotional skills that need to happen.
Hawn explains reducing their stress can help students realize their academic potential.
Giving them the empowerment to know how to manage, to regulate their own emotions, to recognize their own emotions, to know when their emotions are stopping them from doing things that actually will bring success to them. These are the tools we're giving them.
Yeah, that's the important thing. I mean, it's like we don't really teach them grammar anymore, and we let them use spell checkers while they're, you know, taking tests. But really, as long as their self-esteem is healthy, that's the important thing.
Feel good about yourself, moron. All right, hey, back on the Gavin Rossdale thing for a second. Cross-dressing pop star. So, wait, was it a woman who dressed as a man or a man who dressed as a woman?
Well, I would say it's probably a man who dressed as a woman. Otherwise, what would be the point of him?
Well, that was going
to
be my
thing. He had to own up to it.
That was my thing. Is I wonder if he was trying to, like, I wonder if it was a thing where he was trying to look sort of, you know, continental, but then really, you know, but it was just some chick who liked to wear pants.
Yeah, this pop singer named Marilyn, whose real name is Peter Robinson.
Is he, she hot?
I didn't really see a picture of it. Of course, Marilyn, on the other hand, says that it was not just like a quick fling. He says it was a 5-year relationship.
Oh, that sounds like a little bit of preemptive spin control.
Says, I'm pleased that Gavin's finally able to be honest about our relationship. I just wish he could have come to terms with this 15 years ago.
Fail.
So there you go.
All right. Hey, am I the only one who thinks that Culture Club era Boy George kind of looked like Kate Winslet?
Yes.
Okay. Here's Don Taylor.
E! Online reports that Tom Arnold is becoming pals with actress Lindsay Lohan during their stay in the Betty Ford Center. Tom Arnold has been really nice to Lindsay, said the source. He's been trying to make friends with her.
Hey there, hotcakes. You want to go to the cafeteria? It's extra bacon day. Come on.
The 51-year-old checked into Betty Ford 2 weeks ago to receive treatment for a prescription pill addiction that arose after a colon surgery. Lohan has a scheduled court hearing on October 22nd.
Hey, if there's one thing Tom Arnold knows, it's how to be gentle with a colon. Come on, let me in.
All right.
A spokesman for Dave Brubeck says the jazz pianist is doing well after surgery at a Connecticut hospital to install a pacemaker. Patrick Giblin, a spokesman at Brubeck's alma mater, the University of Pacific in California, says Brubeck's doctors expect him to be ready to resume concert touring in November. Giblin said Brubeck is eager to return to the piano. The jazz legend had the surgery at Bridgeport Hospital on Monday after experiencing fatigue and dizziness at his home in Wilton, Connecticut. Brubeck, who turns 90 in December, got an early birthday celebration in August when performing with the Wynton Marsalis Quintet at the Newport Jazz Festival in Rhode Island.
Here's the thing about Dave Brubeck. Now, I'm not a jazz fan, as you know. And so we don't have time to talk about this, but I came in yesterday and you were listening to, is it Bella Fleck?
Yeah, Bella Fleck and
Bella Fleck and the Flecktones.
Yeah.
And so I'm not much of a jazz guy, but I saw Dave Brubeck do the most amazing thing on the Tonight Show one time. And he was just like sitting in the chair talking to Carson. And he did the most astounding thing where he did, because he is a pianist,
mm-hmm.
but there's the thing where conductors will do a time signature with their hands, where they use their hand to conduct like one and two and three and four. So he was doing like a 4-4 time signature with one hand, and then he did like, you know, like a 7-16 time signature with the other hand at the same time. It just made my brain explode just looking at it. Like, I don't even know how you... That's the thing about those jazz guys is it's like, as much as I don't really care for jazz music, I mean, they're really just astoundingly talented players, some of them. And, I mean, he clearly had a brain that was wired, like, by God himself. Yeah. He was really just amazing to watch.
I'm just always in awe of guys like this because, like, he's getting a pacemaker, he's 90, and he's talking about how, like, he's looking forward to going back to concert touring.
Yeah.
I sit here and talk to you for 3 hours a day, and then I go home and nap.
Exhausted. I'm sorry, I'd love to go to the movie, but I'm too tired.
Yeah. So.
You are listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. You can also get it on your mobile device. That is mobile.cascadia.fm. The Rick Emerson Show comes up today at 1 p.m., ladies and gentlefolk. Legion of News brought to you by The Cleaning Solution. Mr. Michael Beatty owns and operates The Cleaning Solution. He's a longtime fan of The Rick Emerson Show, now of Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. And they will come to your home. They'll come to your office. They'll come to your place of business, the place where you live. And they will clean anything that might get tracked on. The ground on, you get the dirt that's the ground into over the course of the winter, you know, at the end of the summer, you're going outside, you come back in, you're going in the yard, you're going to the swimming pool, you're tracking the water in, you go back outside, you get more dust, you go to the, you know, mow the lawn, you bring grass clippings in, the dog follows you in, it all gets, you just press down into the carpet, and then by the end of the summer, you're just looking, you know, like you're basically just living in a swamp. So whether it's your hardwood flooring or linoleum, which I believe we discovered, I think I looked this up, and it is actually not a brand name. I think linoleum mm-hmm. is a generic trade name.
Right.
Whatever it is your feet might touch in your home, they'll make sure that it looks good, looks clean, and it stays looking that way for as long as you have it. You can find out more by calling The Cleaning Solution at 971-533-3211, 971-533-3211. Is that the end of entertainment news?
That is indeed.
Awesome. There you go. Here is Don Taylor.
A New York teenager had his bicycle stolen by three people wearing gorilla and chicken costumes. The 15-year-old was confronted by two people wearing gorilla costumes and another person wearing a chicken suit on Monday at approximately 1:15 p.m. The boy was punched in the head by one of the gorillas and fell off of his bicycle. The chicken got on the bicycle and rode off. The gorillas ran away on foot. The victim was transported to St. Charles Hospital in Port Jefferson, New York, with minor injuries and was treated and released. The investigation is continuing.
I wonder if the entire time he was just wondering, like, if he just didn't resist because he figured he would wake up at any moment, you know, and, like, be in his own bed and just go, ah, the weirdest. I mean, wouldn't you stop and question your own sanity for a second?
Or you just kind of go, your brain would just sort of short out a little bit.
Or you just decided the universe sends a gorilla and a chicken to steal your bicycle. Yeah, things have gone so weird, there's nothing you can do about
it. It's like, okay, take the bike.
Yeah, I mean, really, that's when life has just made some decisions that you're not going to be able to with the change. Yeah.
Well, and I have, you know, my whole weird fear of clowns also, you know, translates to people in big animal suits and mascot outfits.
That.
Oh, yeah. They completely freak
me out. Clown mascots or people in mascot suits, period?
No, people just in big animal suits. It's some of the same. The same fear, for some reason, translates. I am just unnerved by people. Like, if I'm stopped at a light and there's that guy in the Red Robin suit on the corner there by Lloyd Center, I'm just like, I'm just jittery with anxiety until I can get away from it.
I'm going to ask you about this later.
I hate people in big mascot suits and animal suits.
Right.
And so, yeah, so if, like, two gorillas and a chicken ran up to me, I would just give them anything they want just to make them go away.
Duly noted.
Take it. Take it.
All right. Awesome.
And then I'd probably just start crying.
She's Dawn Taylor. You can hear more of Dawn Taylor at rickemerson.com coming up later on, about 5, 10, 15 minutes from now on the Rick Emerson radio program, which is at rickemerson.com following a brief musical interlude. This brings to an end another exciting installment of Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. We thank you for joining us. Don't forget, it's available via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or Legion of News.com. It comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District in beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, it is Dawn Taylor. Advanced technology and magic provided by Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, and chief of staff is Cheryl Kanakoa. We will see you tomorrow at noon for another exciting installment of Legion of News. Until then, have a pleasant day, won't you?